Welcome back to Marvel Goodyear, our spin-off series of the Geek Easy podcast, where we're going back and watching all of the Marvel Cinematic Universe films and talking about them as we lead up to the release of Avengers Endgame. I am Pixel Dan.
Jonathan Leonard.
Jaron McCaffrey.
And today we are talking Thor the Dark World, Jaron's favorite MCU film. All right, Jaron, take it away.
I feel like this is going to be a short episode.
I don't like this movie very much. Danny, back to you.
The end. No, I am actually interested in this discussion because I don't think I think as strongly about it as you do in that aspect. But why don't we go ahead and start with Jonathan so you can give us a little bit of facts on the movie's release.
Yeah, released November of 2013. This is the first movie that came after Iron Man. Iron Man was the $1.2 billion, I think. Iron Man 3, yeah. Yep. Sorry.
No.
The first movie after the last Iron Man.
Yep.
Iron Man was still riding the Avengers kick and it was an Iron Man movie, so it had that huge box office. This one brings us down to earth a little bit, but still impressive numbers. It's a $170 million production budget, $85 million opening weekend for a domestic total gross of $206 million it led to, plus the foreign total of $438 million. So a grand total of $644 million it made off of that $170 million production budget. So definitely a financial success in every way, shape, and form. Played strongly overseas, as Thor movies tend to, that's the money info.
Yeah,
cool.
So who made this movie?
Alan Taylor,
and he has done.
He was a Game of Thrones guy.
He's the Game of Thrones guy.
He's gone on. He did the Terminator Genesis movie.
Yep.
And I'm not sure if he's done much else big, big budget Hollywood stuff or not, but. It was one of those instances where it really, I'm bringing the Game of Thrones guy in, felt like an inspired choice.
Yeah. Well, was he the Game of Thrones guy at this point? Was that going then?
Yeah, that was going then.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I think that sounds like an inspired choice. You know, I never realized before that it was the Game of Thrones guy doing this.
Yeah. And I don't know, I know he worked on Game of Thrones. I don't know if he was the showrunner or if he just did some episodes or what, but I know that's where they got him.
Like, having said that, I definitely can see the influence because Thor Dark World is slow and flat and kind of relies on complex character play, but it's just not there with Thor. The way it is in Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
So, like, I can definitely see the influence there.
Well, and I can, you know, kind of like looking back, because between this and Terminator Genesis, which is not the basis of this podcast, so we don't have to talk about it a ton, but I will say that's two movies I've seen him made that I think had a lot of potential.
Yeah.
And there's just something that I can't quite put my finger on that falls, I mean, flat, I think is the best word for it. Because going back and rewatching this movie this time, I really enjoyed it coming out of theaters. I remember specifically. I thought they did a lot of really cool stuff. And I'm always riding a Marvel high coming out of the movies anyway.
Yeah.
Looking at it more in retrospect, I also don't... I mean, I would still consider myself liking this movie.
Yeah.
It's way at the bottom of my Marvel list. But I still liked it fine. But I can't argue with you on a lot of that. I mean, there's just a lot of things where, like... If I describe what they're doing, it sounds cool, but as I'm watching it, it just doesn't play that well.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't feel like this movie has any life in it.
I think looking at this movie post-Ragnarok specifically, which is like prime Thor.
Yeah.
it really does... I think it affects this movie negatively for sure.
Yep.
Because I'm the same with John. Like, when I came out of this movie, I remember really, really liking it. I have not watched this movie since then. Have not. So this was my first time rewatching it. And I thought there were several enjoyable moments in this movie. But I can't argue with it being flat at all. At all.
You know, there are definite things. there are definitely things that I do like. And a lot of the notes I took are things that I do like. I did not. So okay, when we talk about even you talk about Ragnarok and like through looking back through the lens of Ragnarok, really affecting this negatively.
Yeah.
Even if you look back at the first Thor was so much fun.
Yeah.
And there's none of that fun in this. And, you know, to me, like, it's almost... it's almost like they tried to ground it and make it all serious. And, like, that's not, you know, I want my magical space Viking to be a rip-roaring good time. You know what I mean? Like,
This is entering my head as we're talking about it, but I feel like they were trying to make a much darker themed movie than we're used to out of the Marvel Universe, but just didn't go all in on that idea.
Right.
Because, I mean, there's some heavy things that happen in this movie.
Yeah.
The bad guys have that, you know, the Dark Elves have that kind of feel to them to where they could be a lot more sinister than they end up being.
Right.
That could be a real heavy bad guy, a real heavy, I guess, if played right. So it's like they have all these angles and aspects that could take it over that edge, and they have a guy who theoretically is used to going to that place, and they just never quite go there.
So it's almost like they wrote an Avengers movie with just Thor.
Kind of, sort of. Except, yeah. I mean, because the Avengers movies are still bright and happy.
I mean, in the stakes.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, I can see that. Because that's the thing, like, I mean, this is the one where Thor and Loki's mom dies.
Right.
You know, and even that scene, like, didn't play off that emotional, you know?
Yep.
Like, they wanted it to be. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff they could have done with this where if they would have just pushed it a little farther, you could be like, it would be like a Batman feel, you know, like those movies always had those dark tones and whatnot, like the earlier Tim Burton ones, you know, like weird but dark.
Yep.
You know, and this one has like the flashy aspects and the dark ideas that they just never put that. And I don't know if that's an Alan Taylor thing or if that was Marvel being sketchy on the idea of taking it too far because, I mean, they have their style and whatnot. I tend to think, since I've seen at least one other Alan Taylor feature film that has a lot of the exact same issues, I would tend to think it was probably him more than Marvel. But that's sort of kind of where I can see that maybe being the issue. Like maybe they had this really heavy story they wanted to tell, but then they tried to make it. They didn't go all in on that idea.
Yeah.
So you can't put fun magic god aspects into that without it just feeling kind of like a mess.
Right.
You know? So maybe that's sort of what happened here.
Cool. How do you guys want to start this? Do you want to like do scene by scene or just kind of, you got notes.
Up to you guys.
I like your notes. Your notes are always a good guide for us to get through it.
All right. So
I think if we go scene by scene, our show will be boring.
yeah. All right. Yeah. Let's just highlights. Let's do it.
All right. Highlights. So in the beginning, we have the war. There's a war going on some planet, and Thor shows up. The Warriors 3 and Lady Tif are there leading the fight, and then Thor arrives. I just thought it was a super boring way for Thor to arrive. You know, he just kind of like the what do they call that?
The thing? Bifrost.
The Bifrost. Yeah. The Bifrost just kind of rainbows in, and then he's just standing there.
Yeah. Throws the Bifrost hammer. Is fixed now.
Yep. You know, when you compare, the Bifrost is just fixed. You know,
they and talk
it didn't,
about it.
It didn't destroy that world.
Yeah.
I love how they made a big deal about how like they'll never be able to travel again. And then the Avengers happened and they went out of their way to have like a reason for why they did.
Yeah,
to make sure they referenced it so it was out there at least. And then like I said, like this movie just happens and it's just there.
Did you notice,
like not only is it just there, they're still like then they have to make an excuse for why Thor hasn't been back to Earth yet.
Right.
You know.
Well, did you also notice though that they tried to cover that all up? Because at one point they referenced like we can't use the Tesseract to travel because it's locked up in the vault, and we can't, you know, like they tried to cover all those tracks at one point in the movie. I really noticed that they went out of their way to say that at one point.
So you know, Thor just shows up, and it's Thor's movie. That's fine, but when you contrast it to when even in Iron Man 3. The first time, you know, they give us like he puts on the Iron Man suit and then turns around to square off with those three terrorist helicopters. Like that feeling of like, oh, it's on now. There's Iron Man.
Yeah.
You know, like I didn't get that from like, oh, there's Thor. It's just like, oh, there's Thor. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, there's
Thor. Well, and then they do that like the crux of that scene is they build to this, like they're going through this battle and it's kind of back and forth. And then all of a sudden, like everything stops and this giant rock monster shows up.
Yep.
Which looked like a big Korg.
Which is not Korg, yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah. It's got to be the same. Well, I noticed that this time. I was like, wow, that's must be the same species as Korg.
Yeah. But, you know, but like he, like everybody separates and the thing walks up and like there's this standoff where Thor makes a joke and everybody kind of laughs, which felt weird. And
well, then he comes up and roars at him. Yeah. And Thor goes, I accept your surrender.
Yeah. And like the good guys and the bad guys all kind of chuckled, it seemed, you know. And, but then like that, then they don't do anything cool. Then like there's a weird pause. And then Thor just slowly hits him.
Smashes him into a million pieces.
And that's
with
it, you know? Like, because even this time, having seen the movie before and remembering thinking that was cool, I don't know why I thought that was cool. Maybe I am just a fanboy. Maybe that's all there is to it.
The internet was right.
Maybe I will just eat whatever they give me.
The internet was right.
But watching that scene this time, even now, I was expecting it, like that thing to regrow and them to actually fight. And then it just didn't. I was like, oh, that was it?
I know.
That's all that happened?
Well, speaking about looking back. It, like, through the lens of Ragnarok, like, knowing Korg, I felt like that was a super sad scene because, you know, the first time we watch it, it's just, oh, big rock monster, and Thor destroys the big rock monster. Now it's like, that thing had a family and, you know,
and a weird little mom, friend.
You know, I mean, we at least know that it had a mom and, like, can have stepdads and, you know, is made of perishable rock, right?
I was going to say.
So, like, it's kind of just like, wow, Thor just straight murdered that thing, you know, in one hit.
I hope Korg never mouths off to Thor.
Right.
He doesn't have much of a chance.
So
you can have a stepdad.
Well, isn't that what Korg has a stepdad, right? Okay, because he's the only one that shows up to the revolution.
Oh my gosh!
Okay,
Korg's the best.
Yep. So I did think it was okay. So after that, they win the war and they go back to Asgard and have a party.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
I did really like there's a scene where they kind of call back to the diner, which is one of my favorite scenes from Thor when he smashes the coffee cup. He's like, I'll have another, and smashes the coffee cup.
Yeah, they do that.
They totally call back to that because there's the party and who's the big one? What's his name?
Ray Stevens.
Not Gimli.
Yeah,
I don't remember his
Gimli.
Yeah, I don't remember his character name.
Not
Stevenson.
Gimli.
I even messed up his actor name.
Yeah. No, we're gonna go with not Gimli. So not Gimli's at this party, and he drains a flask of mead or whatever, and he goes, "I'll have another," and just chucks it into the air, and you hear it smash, and you see Thor sitting at the end of the table, and he kind of laughs and looks at his own glass, and then sets it down.
Yeah,
I thought that was something I really liked. I was like, that's a really clever moment.
Yeah, totally.
However, I do not like sad Thor. And even though he's like pining for his girlfriend,
he misses Jane Foster.
Which doesn't make any sense anymore.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, exactly. Like, and that's why I don't like it.
Yeah.
You know, like it's completely pointless at this point. He's been back to Earth, you know.
Yeah.
And instead,
well, and even like, I mean, they do like shortly hereafter, like he goes to Heimdall to check on her,
right?
And Heimdall can't find her,
yep.
So he goes to Earth.
Yes.
Why did he just go to Earth to check on her instead of going to Heimdall? And he makes the excuse when he was there, like, well, we had all these wars, and I, you know, all these people were dying, and I had to go fix this. Like, okay, yeah, you did.
Yep.
That's fine. And she gives that line where she's like, well, I guess as far as excuses go, that's okay.
That's a good one. Yeah, it's a pretty good one.
But like at no point did he, I mean, he couldn't have popped by to say, hey, I can travel now. I'm just busy.
Yeah.
You know, or again, even when he just went to see, why was he going to Heimdall to check on her if he could just go there anyway?
Yes.
Why wasn't he going to her to check on her? You know?
Good point.
Yep.
Now, I think that you talked about the explanation to her. Like, that's where he kind of explained that war that we saw, like he gave that real quick, almost throwaway excuse to Jane of why he hasn't been there. Of he's been basically getting all of the realms back in order since the Bifrost was broken, right? Like that's the whole thing. That's why that war was happening.
Right.
It was like one of the last little cleanups he basically had to do because apparently when the Bifrost broke, all the realms just got out
everybody,
of order.
Yeah, everybody fell into disarray.
Yeah, so he had to go clean all that up. Yep. So that was like his thing. That was his excuse for why he hadn't checked on Jane. So, yeah. And now the Bifrost is fixed. Yeah. Which I don't know. I just, that is one of the... Because I excused it in Avengers because we have to have all of them there for Avengers. Yeah.
Well, and they said they made an excuse in the Avengers about it. Like, because Loki even made a line about how, you know, like how much dark energy or dark magic or whatever did they have to expend to get you here.
Yep. Yeah.
You know? So, like, they made it how, like, he can't just travel willy-nilly.
Right.
But this was a big deal, so we had to come. So that made total sense.
And I guess, like, they do, like... Loki's little hidden passage thing comes up in this movie.
Yeah.
Like what he used to escape. Yeah. But yeah, the fact that the Bifrost was like, it was such a decisive, like the Bifrost is ruined. That's it. That's the end of that.
Yeah,
we'll never be able to travel again.
And I'm fine.
And then this movie just starts with the Bifrost just there.
I'm fine with the idea that they could fix it. And I'm fine with the idea that it being broken caused all these wars. Like, all that makes sense. It was just presented in such a throwaway thing. Like,
yes.
It just happened between movies and was no big deal, apparently.
Yeah,
right,
know? Exactly. Exactly.
Okay, so, you know, I really liked the line, speaking of when he goes to have Heimdall check on
Jane,
he comes in and he says, merriment can be a bigger burden than battle sometimes, and Heimdall says, well, I think you're doing one of them incorrectly. I liked that line. So I don't have any notes because all the stuff that happened on Earth with Jane Foster was just, I was bored out of my mind.
Yeah.
You know, none of it was particularly bad, it just... wasn't
good ideas not presented in an entertaining way.
Yeah,
you know, like I thought it was neat.
Yep.
That you know, they start finding all these portals and stuff like that.
Yeah, they find the portals, the weird gravitational fluxes. They talk about Selvig being crazy.
I was gonna say I enjoy the crazy Selvig stuff.
Yeah, crazy Selvig is yeah.
But like I love too, because like, and this is way later, but they even like ask him what's happened to him or whatever, and he's like, "I've had a god in my head," or something like that.
Yep.
Like I liked all that.
Yeah,
I love later on when they cut to him and he's given that explanation, like he's in a classroom or whatever of what's going on, and they pan out and he's just in a nut house.
Yeah, the middle of
Stanley, can I have my shoe back? Yeah, that's good stuff.
Yeah. Seeing Kellen Skarsgård running around Stonehenge with no clothes on. that's good stuff.
That
man.
Was
I don't
good
care
stuff.
Who you are.
Also, he's
just
running around in his underwear for a good chunk of the movie too.
I did like the intern's intern.
The intern's intern was funny. Yeah, it was fine. I felt like it was a lazy joke, some amusement, but a lazy joke. But I felt like that with everything. Kat Dennings did.
Yeah.
Like, I just felt like, you know, they were just almost that thing where they're like, oh, Kat Dennings will be funny. We don't have to write for her. You know what I mean?
I keep skipping around the movie now, but they share that one very laugh out loud moment at the end when they're doing all the portal stuff, you know? And, like, I don't remember even, like, who started, but it was like, it was when she was making out with her intern.
Okay.
And, like, she just got portaled in front of Jane, and, you know, and Jane's like, what was her name, Darcy?
Yeah.
And she's like, Darcy? And turns around to Jane, and then, like, Selvig comes up, and they're like, Selvig? And then the hammer flies by through one of the portals, and she just goes, meow, meow?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, that was good.
Yeah. So I don't have any notes for any of that. I did think it was funny because they find the one portal and they're dropping stuff through it.
Yeah.
And when they throw the keys, when the intern's intern throws the keys.
That's so good.
And it doesn't come back.
Because were those the car keys?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was good stuff.
Yep,
yeah.
I laughed about that. So that's where we get the... So Jane gets ends up getting sucked into a portal... And that's where she finds the ether, which is actually the Reality Infinity Stone.
Right. Which we don't find out
during the movie.
But we do find out at the end of the movie.
Oh,
so
find out in the middle of
They don't call it an Infinity Stone.
Well, they don't call it an Infinity Stone, but they definitely, at one point, when Odin is explaining it, he says it's an essence from the beginning of the universe. Most of them take stone form. This one takes a liquid form.
Oh, I did not catch that.
Yeah, he absolutely says that.
Oh.
Yep.
I was going to say, I thought the first reveal of it being an Infinity Stone was the post-credits
scene. The first time they say Infinity Stone.
Like, I think,
but he is definitely explaining it as like...
Which, well, we'll get to it. We'll talk about that.
It's another one of those things where, I mean, they go through that thing where she gets... she doesn't get sucked into it. I guess it gets sucked into her or whatever. It basically possesses her.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's a lot there that they could have done with the idea of her being taken over by this thing. Like, they could have almost done some sort of Dark Phoenix style.
Yeah.
They could have given her some power. They could have given her some bad thoughts. She could have, you know, she could have turned weird from it somehow.
They
could have done a lot of things to make that a cool story, but instead she gets it and then she gets a little sick.
Yep.
And then it gets out of her.
They never take it to the next level, they even almost kind of start teasing stuff like that. Like, because it's like protecting her, right? So,
yeah,
like,
exactly.
Like, they do all those scenes where, like, anytime somebody kind of threatens Jane, the ether reacts mm-hmm. and, like, protects her. And then, like, even, and I know we're jumping around, but whatever. But, like, when they get to the part where they're bringing her to the elves' world, like, her eyes gloss over and turn all black. And, like, it almost looks like it's going to be, like, some sort of powerful outburst of the ether, and then it's just not. Like, it doesn't do anything. Like,
wouldn't it have been neat if it had really taken over for her?
Yeah.
And Thor had to fight her with this thing in it to get it out of her, or something cool.
Super weird that they just never really went anywhere with it.
Yep. But instead, we get Malekith.
Which, I'm gonna go ahead and... Maybe this will be something that'll... I have to throw my nerd card away for. Until I watched this movie the second time, I totally overlooked the fact that this is actually Malekith, which is a Thor villain from the comics. I overlooked that completely, and I don't know how I overlooked it. But literally, like, they call him Malekith in the movie a couple times, and it didn't click in my head until the scene occurred where he lightninged half of his face, and then we got the half-black face and everything, and I went, oh, Malekith! From the comic books. I have no idea why I overlooked that before, but I guess it's probably has a lot to do with how kind of lame they treat this villain. I don't know.
He is easily immediately the worst Marvel villain, right?
Probably. I'm not.
He's at the bottom of the pool. Easy.
Yeah.
Easy.
20 movies in, saying that on a whim, I have a tendency to hesitate to just go, yeah, definitely. But probably. I can't think of a worse one. He's a good... he's a good actor that they got to play him. Christopher Eccleston. You've seen him. He was in... You've at least seen him in the first season of Heroes.
No. Don't remember.
Yeah. I've seen
him. There were no elves in the first season of Heroes.
Call. And he had a beard. You wouldn't recognize him. he's one of those guys. He's a good actor, but he... I don't know why he does fun projects, because he just hates...
fun.
Yeah, exactly. So he's one of those guys where, as soon as this movie was done, he was just bad-mouthing having to be in this movie or whatever.
That sounds like the whole crux of this movie.
Yeah.
So I'm sure they called him and they were like, hey, you hate fun.
we're
launching a campaign against fun.
I was going to say, too, Dan, if you've got to turn your card in, I do too, because other than, like, knowing that there was a character called Malekith, I knew nothing about him.
I'm not even sure
if I would have known him as a Thor villain before this movie.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that, like, I know exists. I know he's a character. You say his name, I know what he looks like. But like,
I didn't even know that.
Really? So for whatever reason, I just didn't make the connection until I rewatched this movie.
I'm not turning in my nerd card. I've never read a single Thor comic book.
We did talk about that the last time.
I never read a Thor comic book, but I always collected all the trading cards and stuff when I was a kid when Marvel was coming out with them. So I knew about a lot of characters through that and some of the encyclopedias and stuff.
Yeah. I can say the same for the action figures, honestly, because like Malekith, I think about the Malekith action figure.
Oh, nice.
You know what I mean? Like, I knew him. I know him as a toy, and that's so.
Yeah. Now, I think, as with a lot of this movie, I think the Dark Elves had a lot of potential, but I don't think they deliver on anything.
They didn't deliver on anything at all. Like they were boring gray things running around that got destroyed real easy, except for Malekith and his right-hand golem thing.
Well, and as I say, they had those things that were, you know, the one that, like, they were willing to sacrifice themselves to turn into these weird Hulk monsters.
Yeah.
They obviously had, like, a lot of...
which is a weird sacrifice. I'm gonna make you invincible. Yeah. Okay, great. Yeah. You know,
but you're gonna be a monster and there's no coming back.
Right. You know?
It's like Banner turning into the Hulk, but never ever being able to stop. You know what I mean? Until he just burns out. But like I said, I mean, there was clearly a lot of background. There was a lot of history to him. There was a lot of emotion potential for the story. These could have been cool characters.
Yeah.
These just weren't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess we can skip ahead to the... Well, I don't know if it's skipping ahead, but... So we see Malekith wake up, and I hate him. And then we get to the attack on... Well, Thor brings Jane, because he finds her with the ether, realizes something's wrong, and he brings her back to Asgard, and everybody's super mad about that.
Mostly Odin.
Yeah. Well, you know, that was another thing that I feel like is an oversight, you know, because he's mad at Loki for wanting to rule the humans. And, you know, they have that argument where, you know, he's like, I was going to be a god to them or whatever. And he's, you know, he's like, we're not gods. You know, we live lives just like they live. But then he's just
born, we live, we die.
Right. But then he's
give or take 5,000 years.
Yeah. But then he's just super petty and doesn't like, you know, like when she shows up, he's just like, I thought I told you to be with Sith, and now you bring this human in my house? Yeah. You know, like, that doesn't match up to me.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they're like, remember, too, how petty himself Odin was. And we don't see that Odin in the movies, but there's a lot of references to basically him just being a warrior god for a long time, and then that. So, like, when Loki's doing the thing where he's like, I wanted to follow in your footsteps, and Odin's like, that's not how it is anymore, you know? But that doesn't mean that he wants his soon-to-be king son to be with the, you know, like we, you know, they're mortals, we respect them, but she's going to be around for 50 years. And we're going to be around for 5,000, and she's weak, and we're strong, and, you know, like, I can see those as being separate issues.
But, but I almost feel like that makes it even more, because, you know, all right, okay, he needs to sow some wild oats for the next 50 years, then he'll marry Sith. You know what I mean? Like okay, you know, like she's going to be gone in a blink, why is he that worried about her?
Yeah, that's fair.
You know, but then also, he flip-flops so hard from, like, you know, get her up, get her out of here. She's sick. She's gonna die. That's what mortals do. She's got the ether. Come with me, darling.
Yeah.
Let me tell you all about. You know what I mean? It just flips so hard. And I know he wants the ether or whatever, but he doesn't maintain any of that snottiness. You know what I mean? It's not like, let me tell you about what's going on with you. Yeah. You know, it's like, oh, you have the ether. Come, we have to go talk about this. Have a seat. Can I get you a drink? Are you okay? Thor, get her a pillow. She's, you know, like she's with child or something. You know, it's just a completely hard flip for me, which is a small annoyance. Because what I really want to talk about is how awesome is it that Heimdall just runs out and takes down a spaceship with two knives.
Yes. Oh, my God, I love it. That's like when
he catches that ship floating by invisibly, and he just runs out there with two knives. Not even his big Bifrost sword. Yeah. Two little daggers, and he destroys the whole spaceship.
Yep. And then turns around, there's 50 more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Heimdall's awesome. Yes. Yeah, always awesome.
Love Heimdall. Yep. I love Heimdall. Yeah, that was awesome.
Okay, so then we get to the elves attack, the dark elves attack. Yeah. They just, you know, considering that there's been, 50 of them just floating around in space in suspended animation for 70,000 years? I mean, you know, since Thor's grandfather defeated them, right?
Yeah.
Man, they come in and just take Asgard apart. I was like, okay, whatever. And they kill Freya, and
you know they kind of because you've got Loki in jail for a while here, and they're doing the jailbreak where you know one of the elves gets himself arrested and then turns into the weird Hulk elf thing.
Yep,
breaks himself out, starts breaking everybody else out, decides not to break Loki out.
Right.
But then, like, as he's walking away, Loki kind of gives him directions on where to go.
Yep.
And I feel like he sort of led him to, like, he basically let him kill his mom.
Right.
Yeah, is what I thought they were building to,
but then they never really.
No, they didn't.
Yeah,
no.
I mean, that's a, it's another, like, clear cut. Here's a real cool dark aspect of this story.
Right.
Something we could have Loki play off of. Except then we never just, we just, it just didn't. We
don't
do anything with that, you know?
Yep.
He gets sad about it,
but he never takes any responsibility for giving the thing directions to where, you know, there's no accountability towards that at all. Other than the fact that he tore his own cell up and looked disheveled.
Right.
You know, and then they just forget about it.
Yep.
He got along with his mom really well. I mean, that was like the thing that, like, they played on that relationship. They built that up like it was.
Was like the only one that
they really loved. Yeah, they put everything into place for that story, that part of the story, and then just I almost wonder if it's one of those things where they just decided to cut it for time or something.
Yeah.
But it seems like a real important thing to just leave on the editing room floor. Also, if they did shoot that stuff.
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know. Yeah. It's weird. Weird movie.
Weird movie.
And you kind of alluded to it earlier when they kill Freya. It's no motion in that scene.
Yeah.
It's just flat. Like I don't want to call it boring, but it's super boring.
Yeah.
They just kill her and then she's dead.
Like, they made her pretty hardcore for a second and then she's gone.
And she did fight good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she used the little trick, the little
illusion
trick,
that was neat.
Which was neat to see that that's kind of where Loki got it from
for
sure. You know, that was a cool, because for everybody who hasn't watched the movie, right? So she takes Jane and she has an illusion of Jane so that when Malekith comes to get the ether from Jane, she's not really there.
Yeah.
But then they kill her. Why wasn't there illusions of both of them? Or, something like she just kind of, you know, they just let her die.
Yeah.
So she dies. I guess they needed the push. And then here comes Thor and Malekith escapes. I guess that's where he gets lightning in the face. He gets lightning in the face, and then
they just escape.
Yep.
Yeah.
I also like how like Mjolnir was. He threw Mjolnir after them, and then the ship went into like camouflage, and I guess it can't be struck by a giant hammer.
Mjolnir got confused when it goes into camouflage.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where'd it go? That's what Mjolnir was like. What? Where'd it go?
It's like those bullets in Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Where'd he go? I don't know. He went that way.
Amazing. Well, I'll always think about that now.
Yeah. Yeah.
You mean all the times you watched Thor the Dark World?
Yeah,
in the future?
Well, I guess that's true.
So then they have to go. So, Thor's super upset, wants revenge.
Yeah.
But they also, he knows Malekith can get the ether out of Jane, right? Which seems there again like kind of a conflicting motivation. You know what I mean? Like they don't fit together. Like one or the other makes sense.
Right.
You know, well, he's the only one that knows how to control the ether. Or, I want to go murder him because he murdered my mom. Well, we got to go trick him into pulling the ether out of her and then murder him and destroy the... Like, you know what? I don't know. It seems like convoluted writing.
Yeah.
Like, they just stack too much into that
and
then try to figure it out together.
Yeah. And then give you bland payoffs.
Right. You know?
Because there's a whole thing, too, where it's like they're trying to play it like Thor is the one tricking Loki a couple of times throughout this whole process also. And none of that really plays that well either. I don't know if it's underexplained or overexplained or just doesn't fit.
Well, it just doesn't fit. It's totally underexplained. Because he goes and he gets Loki and he's like, he's basically like, I need your help because I need to know how to sneak out of here without, you know, because Heimdall won't help him with the Bifrost, right?
Right.
Because he can't betray the king.
Right.
So he needs Loki to show him how to sneak out. And Loki agrees because he wants revenge too.
Right.
Which the scene where when he breaks him out and they're walking and he's doing the shapeshifting
bit. Oh, yeah, that's good stuff.
That is the only time in this movie when this movie comes alive.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't, and not just like Tom Hiddleston is so great. You know what I mean? Just like that scene is a great scene.
Yeah.
You know, where he turns her into Sith, or he turns Thor into Sith for a minute. Yeah. He's like, you know, he's like, it's not gonna I just love that he's like, it's not gonna hurt any less when I kill you like this. You know? And then he's Captain America for a minute, and like even the background music is Captain America. Yeah. You know, that's great.
I remember being slightly worried about that scene because when they would talk about actor contracts and stuff for that, there was reports of, you know, like Chris Evans being on a 6-movie deal, but theoretically any cameo would count as one of the movies. So I remember being like, that scene was awesome, but if we lose a Captain America movie over that...
Yeah.
That'd be totally ridiculous.
I totally remember talking about that back then. Yeah. I do love that when he's just like, oh, the confidence. I can feel it. The pants are kind of tight, though.
The
suit's
so tight. Yeah. The confidence.
Yeah. God bless America. Yeah. So good, man. Yeah.
So that's great. So then they trick, you know, Thor tricks Loki a couple times because, you know, they act like he's going to be... They're gonna fly out on this one thing, on one of the alien ships, but you know, then they trick them and jump out so that the forces of Asgard destroy that ship and think they've killed Thor,
right?
You know, but then they're on one of the little Asgard flying ships that Errol Flynn is flying.
Yeah,
you know
Errol Flynn. I mean? Yeah, totally.
So
the new Errol Flynn.
Yeah. So, you know what I mean? But those are just such weak tricks, you know? And Loki plays them up like, ah, you tricked me, brother. I like this side of you. It's like, get out of here, man. That's not
right. You're just not having it with this movie, dude.
No, man. Well, it's you know, none of it gets there for me. You know what I mean? Like, I can't help. Like, I went into Iron Man 2 to take Iron Man 2 down because I hate Iron Man 2. I did not go into that with this movie, but this movie disappointed me way more than Iron Man 2 did.
Yeah, yeah.
At least, you know, at least I had a fun time finding how bad Iron Man 2 is. Nothing in this movie is that bad. It's just all boring. I was bored through the whole thing, and just waiting for it to get over.
Iron Man 2 had Whiplash still, which I still think is one of the better villains that they've had. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I love Whiplash.
I still love that scene. Yeah. In the middle, you know, the scene on the racetrack.
Yeah, absolutely.
We talked about that. Yeah. You can go listen to our Iron Man 2 review. So this scene, they go to the elves' world. They meet the elves. And this is where, they go to the elves' world and lure the elves away. So now the elves aren't going to destroy Asgard because Malekith just wants the ether. So he's just following the ether wherever it goes.
Yeah.
So can we talk a minute about how, like, you know, they have to sneak away and use like a special Bifrost, but like the elves just go there. You know what I mean? Like, like how does that, you know, they never bother to explain how the elves travel.
That's true. And I didn't even think about it. Yeah. Like, I just didn't even bother to think about that, but that's totally a thing.
Yeah.
Like,
you know,
how come they, yeah. Okay.
Well, also shouldn't Loki's little secret tunnel go to Jotunheim, not to the Dark World, you know what I mean? Like, there's no point where they stop and he's
And I was wondering the same thing,
like,
yeah, right?
It's like it gets him out of Asgard, but then apparently then it just gets him anywhere.
Wherever you want to go.
That's how he traveled to Earth, right? Like, that's how he traveled to Midgard and Avengers, right?
No, because he had already... Yeah. No,
he was lost in space and
the cube, Tesseract brought
the
Tesseract him back.
Oh, Earth, the Tesseract sent him to Earth. Okay, all right. So, yeah, you're right. That should have been Jotunheim then.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't... Yeah.
Or they should have explained why it wasn't Jotunheim.
Right.
So they get to the Dark World. Malekith and his group just go to the Dark World. And then I really hate Loki's fake betrayal, because that is not a trick for... That is a trick for the audience, not a trick for the elves.
Yeah.
You know, they do the thing where he's like, you know, he's like, can I trust you, brother, or whatever, you know, right before they go into... fight the dark elves, and Loki's like, nope, and stabs him in the back and throws him down the hill, and then runs down the hill, and Thor reaches for, calls Mjolnir, and Loki cuts his hand off, and he's like, oh my gosh, you know, and then he starts saying, you know, he starts talking to Malekith, and Malekith has been asleep for thousands of years, you know what I mean, and he's just like, you know, the only way that even kind of works or is even kind of necessary is, you know, for his accomplice then goes, yeah, I saw that guy in the dungeon.
Yeah, he's an enemy.
He's an enemy of Asgard. Like, none of that was necessary. That was all just a trick for the audience.
They tricked Jane, though.
Well, Jane... Jane's dumb. We've established that. She transitions in this movie from, you know, contributing character to full-on damsel in distress, so...
Oh, man. Yeah, that's true.
Yep.
Yeah, I think I argued with you on Thor 1. I'm done with that.
Yeah. Yep. She completely loses all her... Kat Denning does more for this movie than she does. Kat Denning goes and gets Eric Selvig out of jail and, you know, helps him figure out, you know, set up the nails and stuff. Jane Foster just runs around being sick.
Being in love with Thor. Yeah, being sick. Yep. Yeah, being sick and sick in love.
So I really hate Loki's fake plan. And so they fight. So they pull the Malekith pulls the ether out, and Thor destroys it with a lightning bolt, and then it just immediately comes back together.
That plan failed miserably.
Which I guess I'm okay with.
Yeah,
you know, I'm fine with that. I almost feel like it would have. I mean, you know, it'd be nitpick. Like, I feel like it's another kind of like. Over dramatic trick, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
For him to shoot it with the lightning and it explodes and then just comes right back together. You know what I mean? It's just like it's a cheap trick.
Yeah.
It's cheap heat.
And it's almost like the cheap same feeling heat. Of the rock monster at the beginning. It's just like there's some setup and then that's it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you didn't, and now we're back to square one.
Yeah, and then they just leave.
Yeah.
The Dark Elves are just like, I'm out of here, and except he fights the one Hulk monster stays behind.
Yeah.
You know, so they have to fight the indestructible Hulk monster. Except that he doesn't feel like a threat.
You're
you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
It feels like, oh, well, now we just, you know, oh, we're going to have a fight with this minion while Malekith just flies away.
Yeah. Right.
Instead of like, now, oh my gosh, now he's got to take on the indestructible, you know what I mean? How are we going to win this, you know?
Right.
So it's super lame.
But he kills Loki.
He does kill Loki. So I was here we go with how the looking back through the Ragnarok lens ruins this scene. Because I didn't remember like not only is the play in Ragnarok like line for line what happens here, and like when I watched Ragnarok, I knew that it was, but I didn't know that it was until I'm watching it where they're playing it serious.
Yeah.
And like the music is the same and swell.
Really?
Yeah. Go watch that
scene.
So
like the silly play of like Loki's big sacrifice.
Yeah, like the same music plays, it swells the same.
Oh, that's actually amazing.
Yeah, you know what I mean? You know, they do the same thing, you know, where he's like, you know, I'll tell Father what you've done.
Yeah.
I didn't do it for him. You know, like it's all there and the music is the same, because it just I was just watching it going, is that even the same music? That's the same music. This music is the same.
Hey, well, good on Ragnarok for that.
Good on Ragnarok.
That's
yes.
awesome. That is
yes.
so awesome.
Yeah.
That actually makes that play even better.
Even better. Right? Even better. Yeah. But it totally obliterates this scene in this movie.
Like Loki's like, this is the music that was playing when it happened. Amazing.
Okay, so then we get.
I love how you can tell the wait. I'm just want to
yep,
say,
no, please.
You can tell the difference between us talking about this movie and us talking about like Avengers and like in those podcasts. We're just like, oh, and then this happened, and then this happened, and then we did this, and we're like sitting here, and you're just kind of like slowly struggling through your notes, and me and John are just going, yep,
yeah.
All right, continue.
Okay. So then they get back. So I'm like, because it's so forgettable, you know, I'm trying to remember what happens. So how does Thor and Jane get back from the Dark World? Because they get back to Earth for the final.
Just kind of go again, you know. It's like one of those, like, oh, I guess we gotta get back to Earth, and now they're on Earth again.
Yeah, because I don't remember how that happened.
No, they jumped through that portal. They found.
Does one of the portals
they
open?
They found one of the portals because
as the convergence, because all the realms are converging. So that's why.
Because she found the keys, the car keys.
Oh, that's right. Okay, she found the car keys. Right. Yeah. Which and then her phone gets reception. She gets a call from the dude she was on the date with.
Yeah,
and he's like, oh, hey.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she's like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad you called.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, really? Great. That poor guy.
I know, right? I know. Yeah, so that's what happened there. I thought that was kind of clever, because then she was like...
That was. That
they
is. Found,
they, he goes, because Thor goes, why are there so many shoes in here? Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's how they got back to Earth. They found the portal.
Okay, yes, good. And that is a clever way to get them back to Earth.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll do that. I did like that, even though I didn't write notes about it. I was probably still too busy laughing about the play from Ragnarok. But so we get back, and once we get back, we basically go right into the final fight, which is super lame final fight.
Yeah, I liked it. I liked.
Did you?
Like all the portal jumping and stuff like that. Like I thought that's where the movie finally came to a little bit of life and had some fun.
Yeah, I did not. I was bored. there was some jokes in it there was some stuff in it that I liked. I liked seeing when they did the bit with Mjolnir changing directions
bunch
of times.
Like, because
it was always going at a thing, and it couldn't find him, it couldn't locate
Thor basically. Yep. Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
Well, I liked where they jumped to Jotunheim for a minute, so we got to see Jotunheim, and then the big frost monster dog thing followed them back through the portal and started running around, and that became a new threat. And I thought that stuff was fun.
Yeah,
I liked that
a lot.
Yeah.
I guess I just never felt the stakes. I never felt like we were having the big showdown. You know, it was just like, here's all these gags. You know,
I got that. I mean, I don't know. Like, I didn't ever think Thor was going to lose or that the world was in jeopardy necessarily. But like, it felt like the third act.
Well,
to me.
I also didn't feel like Thor was fighting for his life. You know what I mean? Like,
I mean, Malekith just didn't feel threatening.
Right.
Did not feel threatening.
Right.
Yeah.
I got, at that point of the movie, I got as much out of it as I think I could have. You know.
Yeah.
But again, I enjoyed that as far as third acts go.
Yeah.
I got what I wanted out of that one.
I did really like the one gag where him and Malekith fall through a portal into a subway, and then Malekith jumps through a portal, and Thor like looks around and he asks the lady, you know, how do I get to Piccadilly Square, wherever they were, you know, how do I get to such and such, and she's like, this train 3 stops, and he just gets on the train, like, he doesn't say anything, you know, he's just like, oh, okay, just gets on the train and rides the train 3 stops.
Well, that was cool because that was actually like a little glimpse at like. Good Thor stuff, right?
Yeah,
like that was one of the few moments in the movie where we kind of got like the Thor that we like.
Yeah,
I feel like that. And why are all the shoes in here? I really that made me laugh real hard.
Yeah.
Why are there so many shoes in here?
Yep. So okay, can we talk about the spikes? The Selvig was because I don't understand how those work at all. Because at first they're like, so the big spaceship shows up and lands and chose Earth to be the convergent point for all the realms, and he's going to turn all the realms back to darkness using the ether, right? So then they're hurrying to like put out all these spikes that they think will stabilize so they put out this perimeter of spikes because it's going to stabilize the convergence, right? That's what Selvig says when they start putting them out. But then Jane starts using them to like make dudes disappear.
Yeah.
So I don't understand that.
Yeah, I got nothing.
Okay. So then, but so then when it's finally time for him to go destroy Malekith, he goes in with like 3 of them and he's throwing them like spears. And every time they hit Malekith, like a piece of Malekith disappears. Like, well, I don't. Like,
yeah.
Can we not? Can anybody?
I didn't say it was perfect.
This definitely feels appropriate for you to tear apart the science.
There's no science for you to tear apart.
This isn't even science you can tear apart.
Right?
This is
it completely.
Nonsense.
Yeah. Like not only does it make no sense how the crazy guy has built these 9 spikes that are going to stabilize 9 realms. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like however many, if we can put them around this spaceship. Yeah. Like, okay. Now they're making people disappear. You know, like, there's no, they don't even try to explain.
And
it changes. Like, that's the thing, too. Like, it changes how it works.
Yeah.
You know, because at one point it's like, oh, everything close to it, you know, they're like landmines. But then, like, oh, no, well, now they're
with Iron Man, spears. With Iron Man 2, you can be like, oh, we made a new element. You're like, I don't know if that's how that works. Oh, we got blood poisoning, but we'll fix it this way. I don't know how that's worked. This is like talking to a flat earther or something.
Yes.
Like, there's just nothing there. Right. You know? Like, how do you argue with that?
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Okay. So I'm glad. Okay. I was kind of worried somebody was going to try and explain that to me. That's dumb.
I got nothing.
The go home is dumb there.
The go home.
So I thought it was funny that those two jets like flew through a bunch of portals. Like, the two jets show up and, well, first of all, I thought it was funny that those two jets show up and they're just like, the spaceship has been confirmed hostile. Blow it up. You know?
Yeah.
How has it been confirmed hostile? Like,
looks different.
It's been there 30 seconds and you guys are coming to blow. Yeah, it's different. Confirmed different. Let's kill it.
Actual logic.
but then they just fly through a portal.
Yeah.
And then they're just gone.
Yeah.
And actually, they're on the world from the beginning because the Oriental Asian, the Asian Warrior 3 is there and watches them fly by. But they make it home. So we get to see them fly back right as everything's reconverging. So good on those guys.
Yeah.
I feel like they need a movie, though. Like, yeah. That'd be
a way to keep flying until you're home.
And then the movie's just over.
Yeah, that's kind of it. Yeah.
I mean, I guess we got to talk about how Loki sneaks back and...
So that, I like that scene a lot, okay. Honestly. It's cool because, like, there's little things that you notice, like, that there's something off about Odin when he's talking. And, like, his reactions to Thor kind of talking about, like, Loki sacrificing himself and everything. Like, he kind of reacts to it like that. But, like, the big giveaway, obviously, is the way he sits down in the throne.
Yeah.
And he sits all very Loki-like with, like, the kind of cocked lean and the hand on the scepter and everything. And I just love that. And then you get that transition where it's Loki.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's cool.
A fine scene.
That's a cool scene. And it was a cool reveal, especially at the time, because it's like... We all love Loki.
Right.
Like, he's the heel we like to boo.
Yeah.
And so, like, getting that big reveal, like, oh, cool, he's still not dead, is just cool. That's awesome. And it loses a little bit going back to see it now, but in the moment, that was a really cool reveal, I think.
Yeah.
So,
okay. I wouldn't disagree with that.
Yeah.
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 He lets
Thor keep the hammer.
Yeah,
which is interesting. But
well, what's he gonna?
He already knows he can't do anything. With
yeah,
it, right?
What's he gonna do? Not be able to hold it?
Yeah, right. Yeah,
that'd probably be a dead giveaway. Also,
probably.
Well, that would have been. Yeah, that's the main thing. Had he tried to hand it to him and he couldn't take it or set it down, just put it there, my son.
And then that's pretty much it, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
That's the end.
He decides to go back and he's going to live with Jane on Earth for the next 50 years or whatever. And
I guess.
Yeah.
Whatever happens.
That's just
I don't know. Yeah.
That's just what happens until she breaks up with him.
Yeah.
They broke up. It was a mutual.
It was mutual
dumping.
Yeah, mutual.
So the one thing, the final note that I have here is just kind of a comparison. Because I thought it was interesting to see and think about with Iron Man, they kind of took Iron Man away from us for Iron Man 3, right? It was all very Tony Stark and how he was dealing with things. And, you know, he had his Iron Man suit, but it didn't work. The one he had didn't work, you know? And then even when he was, you know, at the end when he was... had all the Iron Man suits, you know, they were kind of getting tore up, and, you know, even before he destroyed all of them, you know, he couldn't stay in just one. He'd jump into it and it'd get wrecked real quick, and he'd have to jump into another one.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was all Tony Stark and his ingenuity and then Pepper saving the day. This one was kind of like the opposite, you know, like we just got like full Thor, you know, intergalactic, like, bland as it was, you know, they really went for, like, the cosmic kind of, you know, here's your magic space Viking.
Yep.
You know.
And well, and we're about to steer into that pretty hard though too.
Well, yeah.
Like,
well,
we're really heading in that direction now. So. Yep.
But so I just thought it was an interesting dichotomy there that they, you know, went for, you know, and almost Iron Man's stakes were small. Just how's he going to deal?
Right.
You know what
right.
I mean? Versus Thor, who's now single-handedly saving all of the nine realms.
Yeah.
I just thought that was an interesting kind of dichotomy, you know, outside of which ones I liked, which one I didn't like.
Totally.
I will say, I think that, I mean, I still like this movie.
Yeah.
I have nitpicks, obviously. I still liked Iron Man 2 also. They're clearly, you know, towards the bottom of my list. I will say this is exactly what I would have thought a Thor movie would be before I had ever seen a Thor movie.
That's interesting.
Like,
yeah.
It's entertaining, but kind of boring. The characters are okay, but not great.
Yeah.
It's the best I'm going to get out of a Thor movie. I'm fine with it. Except for the fact that before and after this, I get great Thor movies. Yeah. But looking back on it, like, this is exactly what I thought I was going to get walking into the first Thor the first time.
I can see that.
That's a really good observation, actually. When this movie ended, I enjoyed it. I didn't dislike it as much as you seem to. However, I cannot argue any of your points at all. I mean, this movie just is. And I feel like that's just where it is. Like, it's fine. I feel like there's some cool moments in it that I do still think about. Like, I've always thought about that Loki posing as Odin scene. I think that's really cool. I feel like that's one of those standout, like, Marvel moments in the MCU. Yep. I like that.
Yep. It's not a bad movie. And I would even say it's a better movie than Iron Man 2. But it's just boring, you know. It's just so flat. Like really, to pick it apart, I can't really poke that many holes in it, you know. Any more than any of the other Marvel movies. With the other Marvel movies, there's so much more to like. Mm-hmm. It overshadows those little holes that we want to poke into it.
I can agree with
you
that.
Know, with this one, it's so boring. It's just like,
and thank goodness course shifted for Ragnarok.
Yeah.
Well, and this, you know, this too, like, looking behind the scenes a little bit, this is around that time where there is a lot of shifts between, you know, the phase one was a lot of just individual projects.
Yep.
A lot of freedom of filmmakers, make a good movie, add these things to it, whatever. Somewhere around here, we talked a little bit about, you know, like, they had to change the villain of Iron Man 3 around because of some bad decision making behind the scenes.
Yes.
They sort of have a writer's room going for the movies right now where they've got a staff of guys who are, like, in charge. And around, I think it's not till after Age of Ultron, I think, when that really breaks off, or maybe it was right before. I'll have to look into that before we get to that phase. But, like, we've sort of shifted into that for the next couple of movies, and then eventually that even breaks away, and it just basically becomes Kevin Feige
as
the overlord of all of it. But we're kind of in this transition period here where there is a little bit less total control from the filmmaker,
right,
and a little bit more of, like, you know, people kind of sticking their hands in and getting involved, and they're really developing what basically becomes the Marvel formula, because everything is on the way to becoming, like, this is still sort of a standalone movie. There's not a lot of overlap, but they really shift focus coming soon here. So this is kind of like them transitioning from, okay, we made all our movies and then we put them together and it worked. How do we keep it working?
Right.
And so they're kind of along this phase. So, I don't know if I mean, Alan Taylor, maybe just a boring filmmaker.
Yeah.
Great TV guy, maybe doesn't transition that well. But there might have been a lot of more behind-the-scenes stuff going on than we really know about also, as far as, you know, we know it's generally a bad idea when there's too many irons in the fire.
Yeah.
And this might have been a little bit of a result of that. Mm-hmm. Because it might have been several guys going, ooh, we got a dark story we can tell here. And several guys going, we're really scared to tell dark stories.
Yep.
And when those butt heads, you get a bland story.
I can see that. I can see that.
You're talking about all the transitions, too, and maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like I noticed the beginning of this movie that this was the first one that had the Marvel Studios thing at the very beginning, not the Paramount stuff. I feel like this was definitely the first one that had, like, the bum 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 went through the whole iconic Marvel Studios thing at the beginning.
Yeah.
Because I right away I started it. I was like, oh, hey, That's the first time we've seen that.
I thought they had done it in Iron Man, but like that's just sort of like in my Iron Man 3.
I don't think they did. I think this
that's
was
just
the
sort
first
of in
one.
My brain right now. I know at this point we're full Disney.
Yes. Well, I think we were still full Disney at Avengers, right? But like,
yeah. Well,
but it still had the Paramount. It was still Paramount at the beginning of Avengers.
Yeah, because Paramount was distributing through Avengers.
Yes.
But I think Disney made Avengers.
Yes.
I believe.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was
weird how those, you know,
it is weird how that works.
Like all of a sudden somebody else is making it, but the other company still puts it out and everything like that. And I know Disney has spent a ton of money just getting all of the naming and all of that stuff done. But again, you don't without being there in the room, you don't know who's calling what shots for some of this stuff. So, but yeah, and then those crawls just get better and better as we go along.
Yeah, I know. It's cool because like it's become part of like the excitement factor of these movies starting. Like you see that and you're just like, here we go.
You know, actually I don't like the new one though.
Really? You don't like
the most recent one?
Yeah.
Nope.
All right, so I guess we need to talk about the mid-credit scene because it's pretty important.
Yep.
And I feel like this is a very important mid-credit scene to the overarching Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yes.
Because we get a real good glimpse of what's to come with Guardians of the Galaxy here, because we meet the Collector and we get to see a little bit of the wacky world that we're about to get thrust into. But the reason this is so important in this scene is because they hand the Aether over to him to hold on to as part of his collection. And the reason they give is that it's dangerous to keep two Infinity Stones in the same place.
Yeah.
And that line right there is such an exciting line for this moment because at the end of Avengers, our credit scene was, oh, Thanos is here.
Yeah.
And this scene right here with them saying two Infinity Stones, it's sealed in concrete the direction we were going.
Right.
We're doing the Infinity Saga.
Yep.
The Infinity storyline. So, it's really cool to, like, look at that from this moment, looking back at it, going, wow, this was a big deal.
Yeah.
When they said that, that was a big deal.
Yep.
So that's really cool. I like it a lot.
Yep.
And then the very end, we just get Thor kissing Jane and the big dog thing running around.
Which, again, is just like most of this movie, just this thing that happens and then leads to nothing.
Yay. Yeah.
Because we go to the future movies and Thor and Jane are done and we never hear from that dog.
We never hear about that dog again.
Yeah.
Ice dog.
Yeah.
Good call. I can't wait for the ice dog movie.
Awesome.
Nah, I hope he shows up at the end of Endgame and that's like... You know,
that's
like,
what takes down Thanos.
Yeah, that's like the big, you know, Thanos has everybody beat, you know, and Captain America does the, I could do this all day, and Thanos punches him and he passes out.
He explodes.
Yeah, you know, and Thanos is just like, you know.
I did it!
And then all of a sudden, here comes like, maybe Scarlet Witch can be riding him. Like
Falcor?
No, like Gina Davis on the Sandworm in Beetlejuice. And the snow dog just comes in and swallows Thanos.
Yes! If that movie ends any other way, I'm upset now. Oh my gosh.
The only other thing to add to this, I think it's funny how like the mid-credit sequence is the most important part of this movie.
Yeah,
and the best part of the DVD, in my opinion, is this is where we get the All Hail the King one-shot.
Oh, yes,
so,
yes.
So the Iron Man 3 follow-up that we talked about a little bit
the
Iron Man 3 episode
thing is
where
on
they
this...
explain the Mandarin, and they give us more, you know, 15 more minutes of Trevor Slattery, which is delightful.
Yeah.
You know, and that scene in the prison, and Justin Hammer shows up and all that stuff. So that's a really fun little one-shot. Gives, you know, anybody who is really upset about the Mandarin thing is satiated, hopefully.
This was
know.
For them.
Yeah, fixes that part of it. And like I said, just gives us some more Ben Kingsley and was a good little time.
Cool.
So I had more fun rewatching that than I did rewatching Thor 2.
All right. Well, that was Thor the Dark World, for better or worse.
One Loki helmet. Ooh. One half a Loki helmet.
Oh, just a half.
Just a half. So
one
it gets one big bendy horn.
Just one big bendy horn. I like it. That's a good rating. Awesome. All right. Well, we are now two movies into phase two. Next episode is going to be a good one because we're talking about The Winter Soldier.
Which... Yeah, I don't know. It might not be that great of an episode.
It's going to be another one of us marking out. Well, be sure to come back for that then, because it's, I'm going to have
fun
talking
about it. If you enjoy us being happy, you will like the next episode.
Definitely. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Just a reminder, if you are joining us for the first time, we are available in many different formats. If you are an audio podcast person, be sure to check us out on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Podbean, and leave us a review and a rating. We would really appreciate that. We are just part of the Geek Easy podcast feed. So feel free to check out our other shows while you're there. We've got shows about wrestling. We've got the main show, which covers just all of this stuff, basically, together, talking about movies and movie news and wrestling and toys, all that good stuff. We're also available on YouTube in video format. So head on over to the Geek Easy Podcast and hit that subscribe button. Smash that like button. Leave us a comment. All that good stuff. Hit the bell for notifications. I don't know. Everything you hear on YouTube all the time. That stuff. And that's going to end this episode of Marvel Good Yay. So until next time, thanks for listening, guys.
Marvel Good Yay.
The Geek Easy Podcast is a production of PixelDan.com. Musical tracks used in the intro and outro are used with full permission of the respective owners or creators. Intro and outro narrations are provided by me, Brian T. Stevenson. PixelDan.com's The Geek Easy Podcast is provided for entertainment purposes only. The views expressed are those solely of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily represent those of PixelDan.com or any other party. Be sure to join us next time for another installment of The Geek Easy Podcast.